BFF with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Monday, the 15th of February, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, lacking in experience and learning hard lessons, but enough about Roy Keane on Instagram. We'll pick through Ireland's defeat to France.
And Doolan gathers that one and hammers it into touch across on the far side of the pitch. And the referee blows the full-time whistle. And Ireland did whatever they literally was in their grasp, trying to batter down the French defence in the concluding minutes of this game. But it was the French defence held firm and France just about deserving winners.
They were that and a bit more, I'd say. Stephen Kelly is with us to talk about the Premier League as Pep powers on, but Klopp concedes.
So are you conceding the title then, Jürgen?
Yes, I can't believe it, but yes.
Plus, we've our weekend sporting highlights, and Mary O'Connor and Aidan O'Rourke will discuss getting children back playing sport.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM, and we would love to hear from you. Marie, yet again, we've done it. Jane Mangan gave us a brilliant tip on Friday before we left. The big dog.
I think maybe if we were actually paying attention and actually doing it week in, week out, it probably wouldn't happen. So we're as well now, just keep doing what we're doing. Let our listeners benefit from Jane Mangan's expertise. And look, Jane Mangan is setting the standard. Maybe Ruby will step up soon as well.
No, I couldn't reach those levels. Look, Jane can have all the glory, so she can, but I've just given up talking to the two of you about racing. I know I'm talking to myself. I can see it in your faces when I look at the screen in front of me.
Every time we're getting brilliant tips and we're just not exploiting them, Marie. There's
a famous saying, Dunnick, you can bring the horse to water, but you can't make a drink.
It's true, we're lost causes.
Yeah, absolutely. I could do it a good wash if I hit into the water, it would be, I'd be completely honest with you.
Seeing as we're there, one of my sporting highlights was the big dog and Jamie Codd, his rider, who is one of Ireland's finest amateurs, and Derek O'Connor had a winner yesterday, won the first race in Punchestown as well. They featured heavily on the Grand National Trial card, and to think two guys of their calibre may not be able to perform or ride at the Cheltenham Festival next month is a fraction sad, I think, when you have horsemen like them that are as gifted as they are on the current rules in the UK. They're not allowed.
So what do you think, Ruby? Should they be exemptions be made just for Cheltenham?
I think you can argue it every which way, Marie. Unfortunately, the way the rules are in the UK to be allowed to be an elite sport, to allow to perform, you have to show that you are earning your income from it. In other words, that you are professional. Now, I think if you look at it, the FA Cup involves quite a few amateurs in the beginning as well before it ends up professional, but amateurs do have a chance. And look, whilst Jamie, Patrick, Mullins, Derek O'Connor, etc. are amateur and don't get paid, they are equally as able as most of the professionals. So, look, it'll be black and white, but unfortunately it's an area that probably could do up in grey.
I think it's almost a bit like the GAA. There's plenty of people involved who are not amateur professionals providing services to teams. So it can be argued just like what is elite, what isn't, what is amateur, what is professional. So it's pretty easy to see both sides of the argument, but I guess you kind of have to draw the line somewhere. You have to.
That's the sad reality. And I think you only have to look at every argument that's made here when there's an exemption given, and straight away it's 25 other organisations saying, well, why aren't we exempt to that? So I think it's black and white for a reason, which is a pity, but that's the situation that we're all in, and there's worse things happening in the world.
Absolutely, Ruby. But would an amateur jockey quarantine, would you think one of those now for Cheltenham, would they get over there?
Of course they would. It's not even that, Dunica, and it's not the quarantine full stop, but if you allow the problem is, if you allow amateurs to ride at race meetings, why don't you allow amateurs to play golf? Why don't you allow amateurs to X, Y, Z? The list just goes on and on and on. And it's the same, I think, in with most issues with this. Lockdown is lockdown, and unfortunately that's the rules.
Well, we do have plenty of elite athletes at the moment who are strutting their stuff on the international stage. They're going through lots of testings and quarantines and all that, but it's very important to our athletes right now that they are performing and getting times and trying to get to the European Championships and ultimately reach their goal of an Olympic Games. My highlight of the weekend was our Irish athletes in Europe, and there was a lot of them. I won't actually be able to go through them all because there was so many, but there's a few that I want to mention. Paul Robinson was absolutely fantastic. He had a PB in France. Andrew Coscarin, who we've had on this show as well, he finished 10th, and on the back of a personal best performance, he was in France too. Michelle Finn, another one that we've had on the show as well, she ran a PB as well to win the women's 1500 metres in France. Also Shefa Cleary Butler, she's someone that was, I guess, one of those junior athletes that everybody was waiting and hoping and expecting to really, really break through. So it's great to see her doing so well as well. Another PB in a really high class 1500 metre field. She was in Boston. And then finally for me, Nadia Power has continued her blistering start to 2021 with the first place finish in Ghent in Belgium. And what's really interesting is a lot of those first athletes that I mentioned are part of Dublin Track Club, which is run by Phelim Kelly. We actually had him on the show as well only a little while ago, and he was talking to us about what his track club is about, and just explained to us that they are all working together for kind of a, I suppose, it's almost like a team environment. They're training together in the Phoenix Park, and they're all now on the continent trying to get times. They were staying together in a house in France, so it's just brilliant to see so many of our Irish athletes doing well, because I think when it comes to the summer, if we have an Olympics, which hopefully we will, it'll be great to see some of these names up there in lights.
Sounds like a brilliant club, and that type of environment as well, Marie, to have that kind of peer-to-peer learning. People that are actually sitting across me going, I actually don't think you're very good at that area of your performance and you can improve it.
It's kind of a new venture almost in Irish athletics, because a lot of it, and I'm sure Dervil probably will have told you, it can be quite isolating and individual. So to have this little group of elite athletes all kind of doing their thing and going so well is brilliant. And we might get Phelim on again just to almost back up what his philosophy, and to explain to us again just what is making it successful.
Absolutely. Ruby, had you any more highlights than Big Dog? Was there...
No, Derek and Jamie were about the highlights. I'm afraid most of the racing was off, but I think a lot of it actually was good. In Ireland, they have no problem rescheduling it, unfortunately, because of the financial structures in the UK. They're not quite as quick there, but Newbury have managed to reschedule the car that was lost last Saturday to next Sunday, where Champ is going to run in the Game Spirit Chase. He's obviously, or could be, one of the big English hopes for the Gold Cup, and hopefully we'll have his rider, Nico de Boinville, on the phone tomorrow evening to talk us through that, Donegal.
No Delta Works for Cheltenham.
No, he got injured in Leopardstown last weekend, so he's out of the Cheltenham Gold Cup, which is disappointing for Jigginstown House Stud and Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy, of course, as well. But it might explain why he didn't probably pick up last Sunday and get involved in the finish of the race. When something like that comes up a day or two later, or a couple of days later, it probably explains what happened to him last Sunday.
Donegal, your weekend, I know you're... Six Nations is your favourite time of the year.
Yeah, I really did enjoy it, and it was exactly that this weekend, Marie. It was my highlight, just have the Six Nations back. I suppose the Autumn Nations Cup for me was disappointing. I knew the reason for doing it was to keep money in the game, but that's all it was. But to see this weekend, see England-Italy game, I thought that was real competitive. Obviously Italy lost, and there's a lot of people calling for Italian heads to be relegated for the competition. I don't agree. I think they're coming on. I think there is a goal in the class in different, but they have a really young team and they're making progression. And then probably the game of the weekend was Wales-Scotland, and again ruled by a red card. We'll be chatting to Tomás O'Leary shortly, and we'll go through all the Ireland France stuff, but I just thought it was a brilliant weekend of tradition, of history, of competition that matters, as opposed to, and look, it was important to have an Autumn Nations Cup, but I think this was a step up and it was good to see.
Sander Ferguson's red card, Donegal, for Scotland, it wasn't quite the same as Peter O'Mahony the week before, but it was a similar act, I suppose, yeah, in the way he approached the ruck. That's just gone out of rugby, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gone out of rugby, Ruby, unfortunately. Well, so, yeah, unfortunately, in terms of, I think players are now going to have to change behaviours, because I don't know how you clear out a ruck in certain ways, but just the onus on players' heads, and that's what's actually happening. I actually think in two of these, in Pete's and in Sander's clear-outs, they're not targeting heads. They're just actually targeting space. But collision with the head is rightly a red card now, and off you go. The concern for me is I just don't think... And look, we'll go through with Thomas O'Leary, but I don't think there's...
He's only a scrum half. He's only waiting for the ball to back the ruck anyway. He's never going to clear it out. Go on, would have been.
That was his good thing. He was able to jackal for a ball. And I just think this year we were chatting about protecting the jackler and we're going to look after the jackler. I'm seeing no reward in since Josh van der Fleer picked up that horrible injury against Northampton. It's like referees have said, let's not have that contest for the ball anytime. The only people that are claiming a ball now are big, strong guys like Tadhg Byrne. And look, if we want rugby to be a game for all shapes and sizes, guys like Josh van der Fleer have to go out.
But Donica, you mentioned there the red card at the weekend in the Scotland game, and then that surely is it not just a case of trying to make it a safe game?
Yeah, there is, Marie, but unfortunately it's a contact game as well. And I promise you, guys aren't going out. Like, you don't go out to shoulder someone in the face or in the head. You really don't. I promise you, if you can put hurt on them in other ways or run them back as much as you can, but there isn't many cheap shots in rugby.
More now, though, than when you were playing? I know they're being highlighted more and... we're seeing a lot of slow-mos, but was it like that when you were playing?
Yeah, that was a good clean. And Marie, that was a clean that we practiced. We had four different ways of cleaning out. We used to practice it under a net, and all four of them are a red card now. So
do you think that's bad? Do you think that the game should be still the way that it was when you had those four calls?
No, I don't. I don't, because the athletes are different. They are so strong now. They're so powerful now. If you took... Like, it was grand with us because we weren't the freaks that are out in the pitch nowadays. But I think if these guys do hit you, they can knock you clean out. And look, what we're seeing in heads isn't acceptable. The only thing is, though, it needs to continue. It really does. But I do think there needs to be an onus on referees as well to... I just don't think... I don't feel there is any reward for certain players doing incredible things that actually put their body on the line. And I think, like, I looked at Josh van der Fleer, he was so busy and got very little return for it, and it was disappointing for me. But I think we have to keep going, Marie, and I think I'm a fan of maybe in time the red card changing, that it could be 20 minutes and that player does return to the pitch. But I don't think at the moment, because the consequences have to be massive for a movement like that, so that behaviours change.
I don't know, Donica. I just don't know. It's that was part of rugby, but do you not have to think, right, we can't do it anymore. What's the change? How do we change? It's evolution. And it's who evolves first is going to be rewarded.
100%. And that's what will happen now, Ruby, because coaches will kind of go, no, okay, from now on, we do not target a player on a clean out. We target the space beyond the ball. And I actually remember Laurie Fisher when he came into Munster first. He was from ACT. He was there. If we actually win that race to the space, there's no clean out needed because we're there first.
If you're protecting the player with the ball who goes down, the opposition can't clean it out. Does that mean faster ball to the scrum half? How would it look faster? Does it improve the pace of the game?
It would speed it up, yeah.
Is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think it would be. But then why don't we just have the like rugby league where you submit in the tackle and just play the ball? So there is parts of the clean outs that need to be rewarded and that still needs to... Like, Ruby, I'll be honest with you, if the game... And what's actually saddening in rugby at the moment is there's no fatigue levels. And rucks and mauls take fatigue front five forwards. Scrummaging fatigues front five forwards. And that's where space is created for players, you know what I mean? Like your Hugo Keenans, your Keith Earls. They exploit spaces. We saw it in France at the weekend. Reece Ruddock, Jameson Gibson-Park just gets a little bit tight to him just because he hasn't got that confidence that Reece can get that job done. Do that in international level and it's all over. So it's, you know, it would be good to see it speeding up, but not submission, not...
Just rugby league, like. You came along in the generation you came along, and the game didn't get too quick for
you. You're not wrong. I wouldn't have made it.
I think that about racing, watching it too. We'll continue this discussion after the break with Tomás.
Game on. Game on. On 2FM. With Green Firm. Green Firm's new on the go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour. Game on 2FM.
Okay, we're bringing in the heavies to discuss Ireland-France game, and we're getting the ultimate straight talker and Grand Slam champion Tomás O'Leary is joining us. Tomás, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
We're all good. Tomás, just myself and Ruby and Marie have been chatting about it. Just your reaction to the match. What did you make of it as a, you know, a spectacle? Are you seeing the Irish game evolving?
I suppose it's hard to see in terms of, I suppose, general phase play attack. That's probably where we struggled. Look, our line-out has improved. Our set piece was good. Our scrum was good. And I suppose we created the only opportunity to score from first phase play, obviously with James Lowe in the corner. So those aspects are positive. But in terms of general phase play, I thought even at the start we kicked a lot of ball, and fair enough, testing out the full back with Doolin was up to it first two or three kicks, and we continued to probably kick away a needless ball. Maybe there's a lack of ambition to offload. I understand that you have to kind of win the contact in order to do that, and maybe the French team was dominant in that area. But so there is positives in terms of set piece, but definitely in for Hayes play we probably haven't seen this improvement or a direction that this Irish team is going in.
Tomás, a lot of people are highlighting the attack or lack of attack, but how do you fix it? How do you make it better?
Well, it's difficult. It's easy to watch a game and say, look, we should be getting the ball in James Lowe's hands more and Keith Earl's hands more, and utilise their attacking threats, the different strengths that they have as wingers. Use Hugo Keane and get him onto the ball more coming into the line. But because the defences are so good, and this French team, obviously under Sean Edwards, have really improved their defence, it is difficult to create quick ball and to, I suppose, impose your threats on the defensive teams. At international level, there is less time in the ball and the physicality increases. So in short, it's hard to really put an emphasis on what we can do. Maybe I think if we have an ambition to actually try and throw a few offloads, to try and take more risks, I think that will help us improve our attack. Look, we will make probably more mistakes, as we saw with Ringrose in the Welsh game. He tried to make an offload, and unfortunately it went to deck, and look, we were penalised, and Wales scored a try. But look, if you harbour back to, you know, Jamie Heaslip's try that got the try to deck it or whatever it was, you saw Andrew Trimble and Simon Zeebo offload in that game against Italy. So I think that was effectively the difference between the two teams, I felt, was the French ability to offload. And it wasn't just the big men doing it, it wasn't just the back row and props doing it. You saw for their first score, it was actually their 10 little offload first, and then obviously DuPont with an outrageous offload second to create that go forward, and then they score after spreading it to width. So I think if we could just have an ambition to try and offload, to try and probably take more risks, I think that would help us in attack.
Donald, you always tell us when a red card has such an impact on a game, but yet when France had a yellow card at the weekend, they ended up going in front. How come mathematically we had the advantage, we ended up behind?
Yeah, you heard Ian Henderson speak about it after the game, and I read Hugo Keenan saying the exact same thing, and Tomás O'Leary as well. As soon as you see a yellow card, Ruby, you dictate the tempo of the game. You set into certain plays, or, you know, when you lose a certain position, you might do certain things like call a scrum so that they have to change someone and put someone in their back row. Different things, different ways that you can manipulate it. But I do think Ireland were probably disappointed within that 10-minute window, and you heard those two lads speak about it as well. I think it's really interesting what Tomás is saying, though, about the offloads, because Ronan O'Gara made the point in commentary as well when he was talking about it. We view it very differently. We look for rucks, whereas Ronan was saying, you know, that the French experience is, it still counts as a phase, but to just maybe find a different way to do it, and offloading is the key. And Tomás' point, when you look at it, France had 11 offloads compared to our 3, and I think he's actually hit the key point. Instead of us saying to Gary Ringrose after the Welsh man, after the Welsh game, tuck the ball and carry, you know what I mean? Instead of it, we should have highlighted and said that was probably so close to maybe coming off, keep trying it. But at Six Nations Rugby, it does get an awful lot more difficult.
Tomás, you said there as well that Ireland stuck to the game plan of testing the French back 3 who were capable of dealing with the task. Whose call is that to change the plan then? How come no one changed the plan?
It's a feel. It should be realistically, it should be your halfbacks. ball goes through the 9 and 10's hands, most often they decide whether it's a kick run or they carry themselves. So it's a feel thing, and I think you know, if players are sticking rigidly to a game plan that isn't working, then that's the fault of the players. And I know, like, I had limited time under Andy Farrell when he came into Munster on a temporary basis at one stage, and he was very much of the viewpoint of players taking ownership. The players taking ownership in meetings, the players taking responsibility on the pitch. So I assume that he hasn't changed that kind of management style, and I assume that he's very much of the philosophy that players take ownership. So to answer your question, I think it's very much a tens responsibility to feel a game and to dictate then whether he kicks or whether he runs or whether he decides to take on the game line himself.
Tomás, I'd imagine that when it comes to taking ownership, that experience helps. What does he do now next week with his halfbacks? Does he give them the more experience again so that we can start looking to the World Cup, or are we just, should he just be focused on winning the next few games?
I think with regards to, I suppose, I think he has to look at, see who the next best after Sexton is, definitely. And I think, I suppose, Ross Byrne, in my viewpoint anyway, probably put his hand up ahead of Burns at the weekend. I know he was unlucky to go off injured, but he has, I suppose, proven it at Heineken Cup level. I think he's goal kicking, which is key at international level, is probably the best. If equal to Sexton as well, out of all the kind of tens in Ireland. So I think he probably has earned a chance. But from my viewpoint, even I think the likes of Jack Carty, Harry Byrne, obviously very inexperienced, and even JJ down in Munster should be ahead of Burns at the moment as well. He's done okay, obviously, with his chance at the weekend, unfortunately got injured. But I would be pushing on with the likes of Ross Byrne, or even the likes of Jack Carty in the squad to get experience. I thought Gibson Park actually did okay. I think he had a good tempo in the game, and he cleared the ruck pretty quickly. Even at the end of the game, he created a couple of half opportunities alongside James Lowe. So I think he kind of delivered, you know, what he put on the pitch for, quick tempo, and he got the ball moving. And unfortunately, as an Irish team, we probably couldn't take advantage of that. So it's probably worth him getting another opportunity, another shot there at nine.
Tonica, our defensive lineout you touched on was much better. Obviously, Paul O'Connell has made a difference. Would you expect our tens then to try and put the ball more into touch, get more lineouts, rather than just putting it up on top of the number, putting it up on top of the full back of the wingers?
I think that was definitely the way we were kicking. It'll be interesting to Tomás's view on it, but I thought we kicked either to compete or we kicked to put it off the pitch and make them restart every time. Whereas France just banged the ball long down the pitch, and they got reward for it as well, Ruby. I think Hugo Keane's brilliant at 15, but I think our back three still needs to come together a little bit more. I think it's inexperienced as a working group together, and I know people don't respect it, but when a ball bounces in the backfield, that's 10 metres of, if I'm a forward, I take 10 metres more space. If it bounces twice, it's 20. So you're losing ground the whole time when the ball bounces. So we're not used to that since Rob Kearney. A ball never bounces in our backfield. So obviously there's players gaining experience, but I just actually think the way rugby is at the moment, Tomás, there's no reward for even kicking contestable. You know what I mean? Like, there was probably maybe a year or two ago. There's reward now for kicking long, like France have shown.
Yeah, like, I suppose if you do kick contestably, and you know 15, 20 metres realistically, if you want to have a chance to win it back, so you're automatically, you're getting ball, but the ball you're getting isn't clean, and the opposition have a chance to set a line and automatically get line speed on you. So you're not really going to generate quick ball from kick contest unless you get a really lucky bounce or a lucky hit back. So look, there is an element of I suppose keeping it safe and doing that. Long kicks, as you said, can develop into kick tennis, and I guess it's a case then of who executes best and who is patient. I suppose on the back three itself, James Lowe, obviously in both games thus far, has generally kicked pretty well and utilised his long left boot. But I suppose one of his strengths, and you see in Leinster, is just his ability to be abrasive, his ability to carry the ball, and probably he didn't probably back himself enough and utilise that strength in this French game. And you'd love to see him just tuck the ball and utilise that strength that he has, maybe more into international rugby. And maybe after another game or two, he realised that, you know, that's what he's been picked for, and maybe he should train and show us, you know, that strength and that he can bring that onto the international stage.
Tomás, there's no way anybody could have foreseen 2 weeks ago that we'd be heading to Rome in a fortnight for a potential wooden spoon showdown.
Jeez, Ruby.
That's reality, don't you think? So what will they do in camp now? How do you come around it? That is what's at stake here, in case no one's aware of the fact.
Yeah, what you do, look, you just keep going. You have to dust yourself down and go again. You know yourself, if things aren't comfy in any sport, you don't go into yourself. You can't go into yourself. You can't feel sorry for yourself. So these boys just look, we'll analyse the French game again, take the positive, take the negative, take the learning from it, and target the French game, obviously a couple of days off, maybe till Wednesday, whatever it is, but 100% fully focused on getting that victory over in Italy. Look, I've no doubt that this Irish team will get that victory, and then it's a case of onto the next game, but obviously they'll have to show this Italian team that respect. And look, it's obviously an Irish team that isn't settled. It's an Irish team that there's very much places up for grabs. So that motivating factor, you know, it's only whatever year and a half, 2 years out till the World Cup. So that's in the back of lads' minds as well. So there's plenty of motivation for this group. Obviously Farrell as well. The players will want to play for him because the vibes out of the camp obviously were very, very positive up until, I suppose, the results haven't been going away. So they'll want to give him, I suppose, the deserve that he's kind of been earned from their point of view, because they have enjoyed playing under him, but unfortunately they haven't given him the results that they feel he might have deserved.
Tomás, could it be a positive then in a World Cup like that, 2 years out, we are pretty low down, rather than 2 years out, absolutely flying?
Yeah, well, I suppose it'd be better, obviously, if we're the case that we struggle 2 years out and that we gradually improve and we're actually are coming towards some kind of a peak at a World Cup, yes, that would be a positive. But obviously the current management will want to get a victory, will want to get a couple of victories in the Six Nations and start playing well, start playing good rugby. We can't just hope that it's going to improve and that we're going to build, I suppose, step by step towards the World Cup. But look, it's certainly not a time for panic, and, you know, people calling for Andy Farrell's head at this stage, I think that's, you know, that's crazy talk. He's only three or four games into his international career, and obviously it hasn't been the ideal setup with COVID and all that, and he's had a lot of injuries too. But look, I don't think it's time to push the panic button. We lost by one score to two decent teams, and I suppose we're trying to try new players as well. So look, I think we can see it as a positive, and we can see it as a chance to develop players and make sure that we have viable alternatives in our key positions.
Tomás, our listeners are having their say as expected. We've had a few texts in asking your opinion on things. The first one is, we can only compete with France when we had generational players. Not one of our current players would get near the French team. And just while I'm at it, this listener wants to know, why are we so stationary when we receive the ball? From under HAA, kids are taught to attack the ball. All our players are coming from a standing start.
Yeah, why are we so stationary? Again, harbouring just back to how tough it is to break down defences. And look, I suppose it's hard to get a feel for it when you're watching TV. And like, if you take an extra yard or two, you're still going to be running into that brick wall, and maybe the more pace you generate, the more easier it is for an opposition to get a dominant tackle too sometimes. But yeah, obviously if we can get, I suppose, more width on the ball, it just gives us an opportunity to maybe to get I suppose defenders who are more isolated, rather than run into the tight around the rock where there's three, four fellas and it's double team, triple team hits. So maybe getting that bit more width gives us a chance to get players who are isolated and defending more space, and then that gives us an opportunity maybe to get those offloads we're talking about. Saying that none of these Irish players would get into this French team, look, that's probably, this Irish team isn't going well at the moment, but you have players in this Irish team who have Grand Slams, and there's players in that French team who don't. So I think that's probably a bit of a low blow at the moment, because look, we are going through a tough time, but you know, the likes of Ringrose, these guys, Henshaw, on their day. You know, the Keith Earls, how many Grand Slams does he have? How many Cups does he have? So, look, I think that's probably stating that on form. So, at the moment, we're struggling, but I don't think that's a factual statement.
And Tomás, a lot of people are wondering, particularly Kevin in Limerick, why wasn't Craig Casey used?
Yeah, it's a strange one for me as well. I thought Gibbon Park did well enough. Thought he brought a good tempo, but if you're going to have, if you're going to pick Craig Casey, I think it's strange to just leave him on the bench. You know, most teams utilize their squad, especially when you're chasing a game, and he would have brought that tempo, that kind of freshness, that the ambivalence of youth and the confidence that he has at the moment, and he might have changed the game, or he might have brought something different to this Irish team. So you'd imagine if the likes of Luke McGrath were on the bench, he would have been sprung. So why not Craig Casey? So that's probably the one kind of question mark I'd have over the management this weekend, and you'd hope that he'll finally get his cap come the Italian game, whether it's starting or whether it's off the bench.
Tomás, France are the real deal. We've spoke about them. Do you see them winning it? No, I was massively impressed with their defence, but it was their discipline. We spoke about the silly yellow card, but only 9 penalties. They're now a disciplined, excellent team.
Yeah, I think they're heavy favourites for the tournament. I think Sean Edwards' influence has been massive, and you can see that they're actually enjoying working for each other in defence as well, and that obvious spark that they have then going forward. Probably should have, you know, scored on a couple of more occasions. Paul Willemse, their second row, coughed up a ball in the first half, maybe 10 yards from our line when they made a line break, and similar, Dupont hit threw a pass off his head straight away in the first minute of the second half that they probably should have scored off. And maybe if they had taken those chances, they could have put a bigger score in Ireland. But yeah, look, they seem like a really tight-knit group, a young group with exciting players, and the brand of rugby and like you said, the offloading game that they have is very, very dangerous. So yeah, I think they'll win this tournament. So look, they're an exciting team to watch, and we can probably take a leaf out of their book and try and push the envelope in terms of our ambition to play.
Absolutely. Tomás, France to win it, and as Ruby says, Ireland to tussle it out with Italy for the wooden spoon. Thanks a million for joining us.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
What was the rumours about?
Oh, so I've turned Paul onto mute. The rumours were that you were leaving or taking a break.
Okay, neither nor. Neither nor. I don't need a break. So I heard as well about that. Look, the last thing I want to do is talking about private things in a press conference. But everybody knows, yes, privately we had a absolute tougher time. But that is not only for now 3 weeks ago or whatever that was. That was a much longer time already. So we always deal with it as a family, 100%. And when I came here to the football club to work, I'm 53. I work in football since 30 years, as a coach since 20 years. I can split things. I can switch off one thing and the other thing, and I don't carry things around. If I'm private, I'm private. If I'm in football at a workplace, then I'm here. Of course, we are influenced by things that happen around, but nobody has to worry about me or whatever. I might not look like this because the weather is not cool and I'm white and the beard gets more and more gray, all these kind of things. Yes, I don't sleep a lot, that's all true, and my eyes look like that's all fine, but I'm full of energy. Honestly, the situation is a challenge. I see it more as I don't want to have the situation, but now we are in, and now I see it as a challenge, an interesting challenge. So I cannot ask a lot of people, nobody wrote a book about, again, how did you come in a situation like that and how do you sort it? But we will sort it.
Jurgen Klopp insisting there that everything is okay. Stephen Kelly joins us now on the line. Stephen, Klopp speaking there a little bit earlier actually in the show, we heard him potentially concede the title. We've seen Salah come out saying that everything is going to be okay, and then there's obviously all these rumours about Klopp leaving. Are Liverpool in crisis, do you think?
I think crisis is a bit of a it's a bit harsh to take crisis. Listen, Liverpool, that we've grown to love over the last few seasons, have been emphatic. They've played unbelievable football and they've been wiping teams away and they've just been so consistent. That's dropped off of late, but it's been inevitable that this is going to happen at some point when you have Van Dijk out of the team. And I know it's we harp on about this, but you can't lose a player that has been that influential in the squad and not have ramifications for it. And we're slowly starting to see it's starting to unravel and unwind a little bit. And hopefully when he comes back on the side, everything will tie him back up. The confidence will come back and it will start to build back up. And it's for the manager to be able to do that as well. But for me, you know, maybe not as much as what's happened of late, but he expected to see some sort of downturn.
Stephen, I know I'm a United fan, but like Pep Guardiola at Man City, Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool adds spice to the Premier League. Like, he needs to stay for the show, if nothing else.
Oh, listen, the Premier League at the moment has some of the best managers around when it comes to just entertainment, just for managers alone. Regardless, if it was just a league of managers, it'd be amazing to watch just with their comments and what they say about each other. Never mind the teams going out on the pitch. Like, the fact that you have like Ancelotti, who's just so stern and straightforward, and then you bring Klopp, Pep, all these guys into it who add another dimension to the league. And what they've done with their side as well, they've made teams have to up their game so much because of how their teams come out and the energy they have. And I love the comments from him there. He's coming out fighting. He's not willing to back down. And, you know, Pep had this last year. He got slaughtered. People were saying he wasn't a good coach. He couldn't coach his team. He couldn't teach defenders how to defend. Now look where they are. And, you know, I think Klopp is going to be in a similar situation.
Stephen, just on that point, what does Klopp have to do to evolve like Pep there? Looking at the teams and how they're setting up, I know injuries aside, but has the game moved on a little bit and does he need to bring something now?
I think when you say evolve, I think the biggest issue, and honestly the biggest issue for City, was defensively they didn't have defenders they were comfortable with. John Stones has come on leaps and bounds and he's now performing really well, but they signed someone that could come in and be fantastic. Liverpool kind of have to do the same. They have to get not a replacement, but someone that can fill the shoes for Van Dijk and Gomez when they're missing, because they've shown that they can't cope without either of those two on the side. And it comes down to spending, and I know that sounds but that's what it's going to have to be. It's going to bring in a defender.
How do you think Brendan Rodgers felt on at the weekend? He's there in charge of Leicester, had his time at Liverpool, and here they are beating him 3-1.
I'm sure it must have been a great sense of satisfaction for him, for his team to do well. But another really interesting and fun watch for Rodgers' game was they felt they could see that when it was 1-1, Liverpool looked vulnerable and they didn't hesitate. They just went for the throat. I know Alisson, again, at fault, but they just felt like there was blood in the water and they went after them, which is, and the manager, you could see he was telling them what to do and instructing them, so it was a real kind of killer instinct that they showed, and that was a nice side of the Leicester side.
Can Quebec get up to the level, do you think?
I don't know. Listen, the only time I'll tell you, he's played one game and you're hoping that he's going to come in and he's going to learn, but Van Dijk is the best defender in the world, and you're talking about someone to replace him. It's very hard. So for me, it's going to take a while, and we're going to have to see what he's like. But there's some big games coming up, and he's going to be thrown in his deep end. So,
Stephen, that's only because Marie is an Alisson fan, and she's trying to get the blame on Quebec, not Alisson.
It's hard to blame Alisson for his current confidence crisis when you think about what's going on in front of him.
Yeah, no, it is, and like as goalkeepers, they are going to feel better when they have better defenders in front of them. But also, a defender feels better when you have a goalkeeper that's performing well as well. So it kind of works on both fronts. And I'm sure it must have been a tough weekend in your house somewhere.
Very tough.
So it's a big help when the defenders, when they realise that the keeper's actually a keeper and not an extra defender, like Alisson probably was.
Teething problems. Yeah. Stephen, we have a text in for you, an interesting one actually. Would any Man United or Liverpool player make the Man City team?
Would any player
Bruno
United
Fernandez.
Or Liverpool?
Yeah, I think Fernandez might get in there. I think Salah would still be on every team. I think he can get into. I think he's just such a good player. Everybody else, you kind of defensively see, are extreme good fullbacks, centre backs on fire at the moment. Midfield, Foden is head, shoulders, or whatever. Everybody. I mean, you think you have to come back to the likes of De Bruyne and all, but I think Salah, Fernandez are probably the two that will get in there.
Well, over the weekend, Pep did say that he wouldn't swap any of his City side for Messi or Neymar or any of the big stars. So there you go. It's not even, there's no point having this conversation. But Stephen, is the title race over now? Is that it? I have to say my heart sunk at the weekend when United dropped points, just because we've got another few months of lockdown. It would be nice just to at least have a title race, at least something to look forward to.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I don't want to harp on it, but I've been talking about this for a while, about City just kind of getting back to form and the fact that they're doing this without a striker. I think the interesting thing that might happen with City is that when you see De Bruyne back, the role that Gundogan has been playing is being further forward. And when De Bruyne is there, De Bruyne is the man that's closer to the front because he's the one that gets in the ball and creates the assists. So it'd be interesting if that changes the dynamic at all, because he's the go-to guy for goals at the moment. And if you drop him further back to field, that will change his position. So I'm sure Pep's going to be thinking about that when De Bruyne comes back, he has to play. But how do I put both of them into a higher role? But then when you think Aguero comes back into that team as well, I think it's a shoe-in for them.
Manchester United, West Brom, I think everybody was pretty surprised at that result. But what I was wondering after was, just in the bigger picture there, do you think that Manchester United need new players or a new manager?
There's been loads of things that Solskjaer haven't liked. And one of the things that I really didn't like was a few weeks ago where they were second in the league, well, only a couple of points. They were, I think they're about to go into a game, and he came out saying, you know, they're not in the title race. And I just felt like it's one thing Klopp saying it now when they've lost and they're outside the Champions League, they're just barely in the Champions League. For United to be saying it at that point, I think you got to come out and say, you don't want to put more pressure on yourself, but he should come out and say, listen, we're Manchester United. We want to be winning the league. We got to expect ourselves to be up here, and I expect this team to be pushing for it. But when he came out and said that, I felt, you know, you're not really instilling the confidence into the players that you need. So maybe a new manager, listen, he's done well. They're better than what they were before. But are they ever going to be a real threat? I'm not sure.
Ah, come on. Did you see what he walked into? I mean, I don't think the man's doing wonderful. God's sake.
No, you didn't always say that, Ruby. I really must get those clips up now just to have it there. So every time you say that, I can just... First play. Yeah. Declan Rice has scored, by the way, for West Ham against Sheffield United. It is 1-0 and it is heading for half time very, very shortly. And then Chelsea and Newcastle is on at 8 o'clock. Just on Arsenal, we spoke a little bit about them on Friday, Stephen, and we were saying that we had a fair idea what Leeds were going to show up, but we weren't sure what Arsenal were going to show up. And I'd say this probably was an Arsenal team that people weren't expecting. They just seemed to be playing beyond what we've seen over the last while.
Well, the Arsenal that showed up was the fact that Aubameyang showed up, and not that he's not been trying to show up, it's just his confidence has not been there, he's not been scoring goals. But when he's on fire and he's on form, when you watch him close up, he is such an unbelievable striker. Seeing his movement off the ball, he will be a nightmare to play against. And when he's playing on that left hand side and he cuts in, there's only one thing that's going to happen when he's in form, and that's the difference with Arsenal. If you can get him firing, they have every chance of doing well, because he propels them up the league dramatically when he scores goals.
Marie wants rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but Southampton manager Ralph Hasenhuttle, he's really struggling. They've lost five in the bounce. We haven't had a manager sacking in a while. Could he be the next one to go?
You're on it tonight, Ruby.
No one has gone since poor old Frank. Frank was the last one to go. He's the Premier League. I mean, they just turn him over every week.
I'm not sure. I still think there's a bit of leeway there. I know, like, the 9-0, just again, horrendous, and they've not been great since then. But, you know, again, a few weeks ago, they were pushing for second, third in the league. It was crazy. So, you know, for them to be in a position now where they're struggling in form wise, but when it comes to the league position, I think they're going to be fine. And at Southampton, what would be their main aim for the season? It'd be a comfortable top 10 team, and realistically, that's probably where they're going to finish.
With a bit of luck, they will. Stephen Kelly, thanks a million.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Range available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, over the last week, a growing number of sports stars have voiced their concerns about the impact the lockdown is having on children, particularly the lack of sport. In fact, more than 50 Northern Ireland sports people have signed a letter urging the Northern Ireland executive to give immediate consideration to opening outdoor sport again to children. Former Armagh footballer and All-Ireland winner Aidan O'Rourke was one of these sports people. He joins us now, along with Mary O'Connor, the CEO of the Federation of Irish Sport. Aidan, I'm going to go to you first, because you've obviously been working on this for quite a while and you've collected a huge amount of evidence. What impact is the lack of sport having on children?
Well, I think it's quite clear at this stage, both formally and sort of informally, in terms of anecdotal evidence, that the impact of lockdowns and lack of structure in young people's days, weeks and months has had a huge impact from a well-being perspective. Obviously, I'm coming at this from a sporting angle. I'm a coach. I'm also a father of kids who are in this cohort, and I think a lot of kids are on the scale here, from the very low end in terms of personalities disappearing, kids being more inward, focusing on screens for long periods of the day. And it does go right to the top end of the scale, where it's having an impact generally, and there are kids who are in a really difficult place mentally, to the extent where there's self-harm incidences. And really, the lack of sport is just one aspect of it, but it is the aspect of structure that we can give kids and can do safely, which can begin to have an impact on all of the harm that this obviously is has been a necessary evil to bring the virus under control. But I think there's a realization now that sport for young people can return outdoors safely.
Mary, there really does seem to be a conversation starting about this, about kids, and just the damage that lockdown is having on their development. We all know that schools are closed, they're not seeing friends, it's been socially very difficult. It's hard to kind of balance where to sit on this, because obviously public health is really, really important, but at the same time, the longer this goes on, the more difficult the children are finding it. You obviously have a direct line to federations, to associations, to governing bodies. What kind of reaction have they had to the extended lockdown, to knowing that the children that they look after, that they coach, are finding it so difficult right now?
Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me on. I think the first thing to point out is this is our third lockdown. We're touching nearly 4,000 deaths from COVID-19. So as Aidan alluded to there, this is a necessary evil. And, you know, we're at level 5, and the COVID-19, living with COVID-19 roadmap has been established since the middle of last year. And under level 5, there was always going to be limited activity. But just to give you and your listeners an understanding of what's happening currently in the Republic, in that the Minister Chambers, with the responsibility for sport, wrote to all national governing bodies in December. And they were invited to submit what they would like to see at level 3 in terms of activity. Over 40 national governing bodies made submission to Sport Ireland, who collated the data and obviously sent that on to the Return to Sport expert group, which has medical expertise and obviously Sport Ireland expertise on that group. And as a result of that, the Return to Sport expert group met last Thursday. And obviously, as we all know, there's going to be a new roadmap published next week. And I would be very hopeful that one of the main priorities that would have been gathered in that information is the return to activity for underage sport in an outdoor setting. Now, obviously, outdoor sports, it would be great to have underage sport back. But indoor sport has been particularly challenged. They have lost nearly a whole season and possibly apart from another one by not being able to be active. So it's a significant challenge. It's a huge void. But we have to understand that since the outset of this pandemic, the government's response has been to ensure a public health-led, whole-of-society approach. And look, we all love our sports. We want kids to get back and being active. But hopefully, you know, we just need to stick at it, and we need to ensure that we stick at what we're being asked to do, and we need to bring the cases down. It's down today. Today was the first time since December there's been no death recorded in the Republic. So that's good news. So it proves that the restrictions are working. And my final point I would just say is that in my opinion, we need to get a huge cohort of the population vaccinated. That is going to take time. There's no point in saying otherwise. Listening to the news today, currently we only have 1.8% of our population totally vaccinated. That's 90,000 out of a population of 4.9 million.
Aidan, you were part of that group that sent the letter to the Northern Ireland executive asking for immediate consideration to opening outdoor sport to children again. How was that received?
I don't know is the short answer to that. We never received a response formally, although we probably have heard through back channels that it has been considered. There's a couple of angles that was coming from. Obviously, we all love our sport and we all love to be part of that. We would all love sport to return in all its glory, but that's not possible at the moment, and everybody is quite clear about that. But it doesn't have to be a broad brush. There's a very particular cohort here of young people who receive so much benefit from being involved in sport, and there, if we approach this with a bit of nuance, there's absolutely no reason why we couldn't restart outdoor sport at the moment. I mean, the science backs that up. The only impact potentially with all of that is the trust that you would have to put in adults in terms of how that sport would be catered for, how it would be delivered. And as far as I'm concerned, there was so much time and energy poured into developing these robust protocols for delivering sport safely last summer and autumn. And if we can't trust people to do that through sanctioned sporting organisations, then I really do worry for society, given the fact that sport can be delivered safely for these young people who are so vulnerable and so in need. I would be moving heaven and earth to try and move politicians and decision makers to that area where they can see the value, the impact that they could have on young people's lives, and endeavour to try and give them that outlet as soon as possible.
Mary, we are getting quite tight on time, but if we push, well, I would love it, if we push strongly for sport, do we risk excluding a lot of children that aren't involved in sport as well? And everybody's mental health is being tested, but exclusion for children is quite a big thing as well. Does the government need to encompass just more than sport?
Yeah, look, from obviously I can only speak on behalf of the sports sector and the national governing bodies who have been working really, really hard. I think you're right. I think obviously if you allow sports to open, then there are other pastimes that kids favour and that would want to go into those hobbies and so on. So it's a huge challenge, and it's difficult. The people are working really, really hard, but I think we also need to go back to the burden of compliance, and that burden of compliance is on the volunteer. And there's 450,000 volunteers in this country who volunteer for sport, and their job is difficult enough as it is. I would prefer to see the sport return at level 3 as allowed for in the current guidelines, and hopefully with the new guidelines next week that will happen.
Okay, well, Mary and Aidan, we really appreciate you taking the time. It obviously is something I think that means quite a lot to a lot of people. I think especially the parents who've been at home trying to homeschool for the last few weeks. It would be great to get them out and about. Thanks so much for taking our call.